The brothers Wiss. The brothers Wiss, brothers Wiss. The brothers Wiss. The brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp. Let's take a ride through space.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg with the Brothers Wisp, number 124, 124 of these things. Today, we have no new patrons, which is sad. It's a little bit heartbreaking. Maybe there was just too many faces on the podcast before. It confused and disoriented people. But what we're talking about is you go to patreon.com/yourbrotherswiss. You throw us a couple of bones and you get access to our patron-only Slack where you see these lovely faces in the Slack all the time. So please jump over there and support us. And speaking of support, we have our sponsors. So I'm going to do them in reverse order this time. Mix it up a little bit. We have towercoverage.com. It's basically an RF propagation system that you can log in to get real-time data metrics to enable your coverage area, reaching your customer base, and more. The industry's best RF propagation mapping system allows website integration for customer sign-up and pre-qualification. Use this data to scientifically plan network expansion and help your WIS succeed. Jump over to towercoverage.com, and if you haven't already, you get a free trial. You can try it out and see what do. Well, let's see, what else do we have? QuickBit. So QuickBit.com, these are the guys that make the fascinating 60 gigahertz kit. Miller and I actually did a podcast with them, had some really good conversations. I'm checking their website right now. I'm scrolling. It doesn't look like they have the store up yet. I'm going to look at it every time, and I'm going to be heartbroken just a little bit every time the store's not up and running. But I assume they'll have it pretty soon. So it's got a crazy feature set for the price. It's also got an API, which I think is really cool. I can't wait to get in there and dig in. And they actually sent Miller and I some of the documentation on that. And it looks pretty fleshed out. I mean, it looks like it's pretty ready to go for prime time. We've also got deployment tools, great distance, up to 8 clients per hub. And they actually have a little bit of new kit on the site. So pop in there and take a look. That's quickbit.com, quickbit.com. We also have Sonar as a sponsor, scalable, intuitive, comprehensive ISP and operational support system. So you want to bill your customers and have them shut off automatically. That's the kind of thing you're looking at there. You can go to sonar.software and give them a look. And then we also have Cambium. They are still running the EPMP bundle. I think it's really probably mostly stationed, or rather positioned, for new WISPs. You probably want to give some Cambium stuff a try for the first time. This is probably going to be a good avenue. $6,000 value. You're getting it for $2,000. You can get the CN Heat trial if you're interested. There's no sales pitch on this one, right? You just pop in, take a look at it. They'll give you 2 hours of one-on-one with an EPMP network engineer. They're not going to give you the hard sell. They're just going to help you out however they can. You get the RF Elements twist horns. You get 6 months of VSBOT Met automated billing. And I know Miller's a big fan of them. So pop over. The link is going to be in the show notes on that one. Excellent. All right. Done with that. Let's get to some of the stuff. So there was just a teensy bit of hardware, at least that I noticed. I know there's a lot more stuff that goes on that I pay attention to. Some weeks are better than others. This week, I actually, Thursday at 2 a.m., I did a workshop for a bunch of guys out of Nigeria. So that was an interesting one. That one went from 2 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. So it was, I was pretty much dead on my feet by the time I got to the end of that thing. And here I was thinking I was done with my late nights now that I've moved over to a sales job. But alas, not quite. Dude, it takes me so long to bounce back from a late night like that. It's ridiculous. I am so old.
You are so old.
Dude, it is like, it's painful. My knees scream that to me every day, how old I am. Speaking of, I'm going down the rabbit hole. Speaking of my knees feeling old, we got VR now. So we've got the Valve Index, and we've got that running. And we've been having a lot of fun with it. I've been playing Pistol Whipped. I don't know if you guys have. No? You're giving me crazy looks.
I have
crazy looks.
No idea what you're talking about.
So there's a VR game called Pistol Whipped, where you're basically stationary and the world kind of moves at you at a given rate. And then it's got like cool music, and then like people jump up and you got to like shoot them sometimes to the beat of the music. But it's all about dodging. And so I'm doing all this like this moving around, and just my old man knees, it's killing them. Just I'm dying by inches. trying to do things that are interesting. It's awful. No? No takers? All right, I guess. Now, I know, Nick, you did some VR, like, just before lockdown hit, you got some VR stuff, didn't you?
Just before, yeah, for a short period. I still have it, I just haven't had a lot of time.
Well, is Mary playing it?
Not right now. I should probably let her, because she was having a blast with Beat Saber.
My wife has been killing Beat Saber, too. She has so much fun playing
it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She went a little ham and bought, like, a whole bunch of music packs for it, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I guess she needed some more variety, but she's been having a lot of fun. I tried...
It's the gym replacement for COVID.
Well, not necessarily. She's been torturing me in the garage, and she's been making me do gym stuff in the garage, too, right? So you get a little bit of, get a little of both in there. But it is... I mean, it's definitely... It's been good exercise for my kids, getting them off their butts and actually moving and doing stuff. Although, my one kid, my oldest... He keeps the craziest schedule now. It's hard to sort of keep him as a normal human should be. But I wake him up at 9:30, and when I go to sleep at like 10:30, that's his cue to go and play VR because he knows everybody else is done with it. So he'll play till God knows how long, and then finally go to sleep. But you got the you got the Quest, right? The Oculus Quest.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
I think so. I think it's fun, but like. There's a lot of games I wanted to play on PC through the VR. Like, I know, like, Fallout and a bunch of other games have a VR mode and stuff, but the Quest doesn't really connect to the computer.
Mm.
So it's just a standalone.
My kid's been playing Half-Life Alyx. He's been having a lot of fun with that. It's pretty bonkers watching him play. It's like everything is interactive. You know, you can touch everything, poke everything, break all the things. It's pretty neat. I tried getting... this Exorcist game because I thought, you know, it'd be fun to play a horror game. I played for about 30 minutes and then I had to lay down, dude. I was so motion sick. Like, it killed me. It's like the game.
Was it like Phasmophobia or something?
I don't know. I haven't seen that one, but you can do the thing where you teleport to move around, or sometimes you have to actually like use the joystick and move yourself. Dude, I was so nauseated. I couldn't handle it. And my oldest kept trying to correct me and saying, you're not motion sick, technically. And I was like, dude, I don't care. I feel just as pukey as if...
It's something.
Yeah, it's like, it's all the same to me. I don't care. Anyway, I digress. You guys aren't interested in the VR stuff, so that's fine. I get it. Let's see. There was some real hardware news, and that was the Netonix. I'm not sure what the model number is, but it's a 14-port PoE with two SFP pluses.
WS314600AC.
There you are.
Something like that.
Johnny on the spot. So I think this first version's AC only, right?
Yes.
Powers Air Fiber, MOSA, SAF. What's new and interesting about this, other than it's finally got SFP plus ports?
10 gigabit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got two 10 gig ports on it, and it looks like... A lot more high power ports. 1 through 8 will actually do 48 volt, 1.5 amp, which is up from 1 through 4 on some of the other models.
It says it's got a 600 watt budget on the total box.
It's big boy. That's biggest wattage I've seen on one of these so far.
That's a lot of juice. I saw it's got a humidity probe, a temp probe, and also a relay where you can control external devices with it too.
And a door opening connection.
That's right.
Relay.
Yeah, I saw that too. So that's interesting.
So you can know if your enclosure's open or not.
I guess. I mean, they're ticking a lot of boxes. So you've got your temp probe and humidity, and then whether the enclosure's open or not. I mean, that's a lot of the stuff you would kind of operationally want to know about.
Yeah.
None of their other models had those little doodads, did they?
No, that's definitely extra add-ons. And it also has active overcurrent protection on all PoE ports to protect the switch from shorted cables, which is kind of interesting. Looks like it won't save the devices, but it'll save the switch itself from the description.
So. Yeah, and then I think that was the biggest thing that I heard about it, because those Nectonics switches were so fragile before. There's so many people doing so many things, you know, as simple as plugging in a device that would cause the PoE to burn out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or unplugging
it. We have a lot of Netonixes, and I've had 2 to 3 ports do that. So it's probably not as bad as it's made out to be, but it has happened to me. But this is definitely a good addition to it. Now, since it has 10 gig ports, it's not those are SFE Plus ports, but they're not the copper 2.5 gig or 10 gig ports. So we don't have everything yet.
Gotcha. I'm assuming they'll do 1 gig too, right? 10 gig, 1 gig.
Yeah, it's 1 gig copper and then 10 gig SFP plus. But you know, a lot of these new radios are coming out with 2.5 gig copper ports. So.
Oh wow! Can't have everything.
Yeah.
That are there many things using 2.5 gig? I mean, I know IgniteNet does.
I think the QuickBit stuff does.
Okay.
The QuickBit, the bigger of the two models, I think the outdoor model has it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah they are.
Dual copper 2.5 gig ports. And I'm sure a lot of this 60 gigahertz stuff that's coming out in the future will have a lot of copper multi-gig ports on it.
Wasn't there some Ubiquiti device just recently that I think I saw Air Fiber 60 gig radio? That's not the one that's just got the standard 5 gig failover that we already talked about, is it?
They have an Air Fiber 60 long range. They're doing a competition with it right now, and people across the country or the world are posting the longest links. And then some people have done like 12 kilometer 60 gigahertz links. I was just talking with my coworker about this stuff.
It's a dish.
Yesterday.
It looks just like the LHG. Well, I mean, not just like, but very similar to the LHG.
Yeah. Yeah. I think.
Yeah, dumb.
It goes up to 71 gigahertz, too.
Right, yeah. That was the thing that kind of caught my eye, was that I think this is the first product I've seen that goes up to 71 gigahertz.
Yeah.
And, you know, at first I thought, you know, I saw the, you know, 12 kilometer claim. And I was like, oh, great. You know, we got Ubiquiti's marketing department again, you know, 12 kilometers and 60 gigahertz. Which, not to say that 12 kilometers and 60 gigahertz is still not going to be a bit of a stretch. But,
It is in the lower bands. I mean, once you get up to 68, I think it's like a fourth of a dB loss per kilometer or something like that, or less. So you can get a little bit further, and then I think 71's even less. So for the absorption.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, it'll certainly go a lot further than other 60 gig gear.
Yeah.
You know. You know, that's kind of the redeeming quality of this, in my eyes, that it's the first one that'll, you know, be able to go a reasonable distance and be inexpensive, you know, because 80 gig gear is great, but, you know, it still costs $5,000 for a link. You know, this'll be a lot less.
They seem to be pushing those prices down.
Well, they're saying $400 too, so. Is that for a single radio or for a pair?
I don't know. I'm actually trying to get into the beta store to see the sheet on it.
Nice. Let's see what else. That's interesting. So everybody's getting into that 60 gigahertz game. Are you Miller, as the user of more 60 gig than anybody else that I know? Is that something you guys would be interested in? Something that could go long distance in 60?
Yeah. I mean, we'd have to be very selective about where we use it, because obviously all the higher channels, there's limited higher channels, so we can only do so much on a rooftop. But we'll have to see. Don't know what the front to back ratio of, you know, is on it or anything. So.
Like rejection?
Or just how much radiation seeps through the back of it. Mm. You know, the Microtech stuff has been pretty good. So
interesting. So while we're talking about radios and Microtechs, somebody, I'm going to say an anonymous person in the Slack if you were in the Slack, you know who this person is. But they were, I'm not going to say complaining, maybe venting.
Disappointed, father?
I don't know. It could be. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. There you are. About MikroTik, specifically in their AC stuff. I guess they're sticking with the 2.5 dBi antennas for some reason or another. When they say that everybody else has pretty much moved on to 4 to 6 dBi on their AC radios, right? So for better receive sensitivity and things like that. I guess I know in my application I could use a little bit better receive on some of the radios I'm using in some of the various areas that I'm using MikroTik's in. So I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of additional gain on the 2.5. I mean, even in my house, I see it on some of the stuff I'm using with 2.5. It could, you know, once you get back to the kind of the edge corners and everything like that, I just barely lose it. So I would like to see that. Do you think that's just, I mean, it's gotta be cost savings, right? So they've got kind of a form factor, a case size, and maybe they can't fit a bigger antenna. Because a lot of the, I mean, most of the MikroTik kit we buy nowadays, right, it has it built right into the board as the antenna right on there. And I guess, you know, we always talk about how they have the same cases they reuse over and over, and I guess that constrains them on how large they can actually make those things.
Well, they have some devices with 3 chains for 5 gigahertz. They just, you know, they have the 411 with a 4. So they have done it. It's just not...
not commonplace.
I mean, it's... there's no talk of multi-user MIMO on it either in the chipsets when they talk about it. So
it I'm going to make a prediction, and it's mostly for comedy's sake, not that I actually think this. I'm going to go with that they bought an entire container ship of 2.5 dB antennas, and they're just going to be using them for a while.
Well, no, I mean,
you got to work through that back inventory.
I think, because, I mean, think about it. Most of their antennas aren't like whip-style antennas. They're mostly built right onto the board, right? So they're right on the design. So it's just whatever they put in the design is what ends up on the thing. But I guess they're consuming too much of the board with the electronics, and they don't have enough space in there. But, I mean, was it HAPAC3? Does that thing still just have a 2.5 decibel antenna in it? Because that case is huge on the inside.
I just got some of those in the other day. My pre-orders came through.
How do they look?
I haven't even opened the box.
Wow. Fantastic. I guess you're just using your imagination at this point.
Yeah, no, I think it was just yesterday. Yesterday they came in. Yeah, the HAPAC 3 has... oh, 5 gig is 5.5. And 2.4 is 3.
There you go.
So I guess, when they have external antennas, it's a reasonable amount of gain.
There you go. Fantastic. So you guys see anything new as far as hardware goes? Because that's kind of all I picked up on in the last couple weeks.
Well, I got the specs on the AirFiber 60LR a little bit. It's a quad-core ARM Cortex A7 CPU with 256 gigs of DDR3 RAM, and it's a gigabit Ethernet port. Max power consumption is 18 watts, which is pretty good.
18?
18, yeah.
Oh, that's really low. Or it seems
that's,
like it.
That's, yeah, well, the LHG stuff is really low like that, too. And then we've got GPS, probably for some kind of syncing. Maximum throughput is 1.8 gigabits per second. So they don't really have really high capacity over it.
And then I assume that's also going to be half duplex, and that's the most optimistic number you can probably get. So you probably only get.
That's probably 1.8
aggregate. 1.5.
Yeah, that's probably the aggregate amount. So you probably get, you know, up 1 gig down and 800 up. something like that at the same time.
Which most links are some asymmetrical anyway, right? So I'm sure that's fine.
Yeah, 57 to 71 gigahertz. Okay, max conducted TX power is 21 dBm. That's interesting. Channel bandwidth is 2160 or 1080 megahertz. Microtech stuff is all in a 2160 size. Antenna gain is 43 dBi. So that's
it. I would like to see them on, you know, on some of the 60 gigs products. They do have half channels.
Yeah, that's you'll the 1080.
Yeah, and you'll get a bit more distance out of that half channel. I would like to see something kind of like Mimosa's auto, you know, as your link loses quality because of rain, most likely in 60, that, you know, it would auto downshift. But that could be asking a bit much of
of the channel size. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. So here was something I was looking for that we talked about. I don't know, somewhere, I think it was November 11th, so was that 10 days ago? YouTube had this massive outage. I mean, it was global.
Yeah.
It hit people in Australia, over in Europe, and it certainly impacted us over here. And I've been Googling, and I can't find anywhere, I don't find it listed anywhere what the outage actually was caused by.
Any root cause for it?
I haven't seen anything.
Interesting.
Granted, I only looked for like somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes, but usually it doesn't take very long to find something.
Yeah.
No, I know in the Nanog list, somebody posted up a screenshot of them, I guess, doing a packet capture or something like that. I don't remember what it was, but they showed a screenshot that it was like the Google Video site was trying to pull from YouTube site, and it was getting blocked by Core's policy, like it, for every request, it was one after another. So maybe that had something to do with it, kind of hidden on the back end. It's curious why they're so, I mean, generally you see, you know, a root cause pretty quick on that stuff. They obviously know what caused it because they fixed it. So
maybe they're still unpacking it.
You know, maybe they just rebooted everything, just turned it off, turn it back on.
Yeah, that works.
So idea if it was routing based or
rebooted Google.
Maybe, I don't know, man, something like that. I can't imagine it being like a routing issue, right? It was probably they pushed some new configuration or something and it just rolled across everything. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not finding much on Nanog. I figured there'd be something there, but
yeah, there's like nothing.
There's nothing.
So that led me to I can't remember who it was. Ugh, it all runs together for me. But somebody was talking about down detector. So that was the first thing they popped in and checked YouTube. And I saw they had a commercial API. So I hit them up. I was like, hey, man, I work for Red Hat. I'd like to demo this API, you know, showing stuff down to my customers. And they're like, sure. We'd be happy to help you with that. You just have to pay like everybody else. And oh, by the way, it's 24 grand a year. I was like, oh, no thanks. If you ever come up with like a developer program, just let me know. Be happy to jump in on that. But that's bonkers for API access to down detector. They want you to pay $2,000 a year or a month. That's insanity.
Yeah, that's I can't imagine what sort of content would be worth paying $2,000 a month for.
I have no idea. You think they get a lot of takers?
I would hope not, but I mean, there's some people that are just like, whatever, rounding error, moving on.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see what else. Talking about APIs, I've been trying to learn, use, and get better with APIs here lately. And I did a blog post on using VirusTotal's API. Are you guys familiar with that? You ever use VirusTotal.com?
You just throw a file up there and have it scan it for you?
Yeah. Yeah, so we can check it out. Or you could put a URL in there, and it'll run it across like their database of all these various sites that have scanned it, and it'll tell you whether there's potentially malicious content on it or not. It's actually pretty cool. So I've been talking a lot of security guys lately. We're making a security push apparently in our automation plays, and I have like a CISO friend of mine, and I've talked to just several people, I guess, what do they call it, like investigation enrichment or something. I don't know why they can't just, you know, use normal terms. They got to make it sound all cool, I guess, secret squirrel spy agent stuff. But yeah, so you pop in there, you take a look at it, but they also have an API, which is pretty cool. They have a free one, a theoretically non-commercial one, and their limits aren't super strict either. I mean, so, you know, if you're like demoing in your lab and stuff like that, or using it for your house or whatever, it's pretty cool. But it's actually really easy to interact with. So I've been looking at ways I can kind of automate people's security plays. And so one of the things a lot of times they'll do is they'll get like a like if they're using Mimecast or something, which is like a mail scanning service, they'll get like a flag from one of their users. And then what they'll do is they'll take that, and then they'll go to Mimecast, they'll look at all the links, and then they'll look them up in like VirusTotal, and they get kind of a reputation score on those things or whatever. So they have to like move and do all of these pieces. And so I was looking at how do you actually sort of automate that stuff. And I think I might get access to Mimecast pretty soon. So it'd be cool if I can kind of snap all those bricks together.
Why don't you look at doing something with like fail to ban or fastnetmon with Ansible? Is that something that you'd be able to like, are you only allowed to look at like commercial products and make something, or can you?
No, man, I can do anything. Like I did some automation against Zabbix, so I've done that plenty of times. That's open source. It's just
so like, for example, if you get fail to ban, it wants to ban something, you could take that IP and use Ansible and run it against a playbook across your whole network and ban it, you know, across.
Oh, for sure.
Know, or do something like that.
For sure. Like, you know, if
that'd be kind of cool.
Like fail to ban could see, you know, like I don't know, break-in attempts or something from a specific IP address, and then you could have, I don't know, there's a myriad of ways you could do it. You could probably have that go off to your logging server, your Elk stack or your Elastostack or whatever it is, and then that, you know, could have a match based on that that would call your automation, and then you could have that banned right at the firewall. Or I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you could do the same sort of stuff with, I guess, with like a honeypot or whatever, and have it listening with your fail to ban, and then yeah, just zip that stuff over to your automation, have it all do those stuff.
There's some software canaries you can run to and make them look exactly like services running on your network, and probably integrate somehow with that too. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So what I've done, I'm sorry, I'm writing notes here. A lot of the stuff I talk about is just like big commercial stuff, because that's what I hear the people I'm getting in front of talk about. So it's like, oh well, you know, I want to like automate against the products they're talking about, at least if I can. Some people are like, you know what, I'll find something that's sort of like what they're using, and I'll make everybody look at this thing, which I think is cool, but it's a little bit more compelling when I say
the HashiCorp password stuff is really cool.
Yeah,
like I've been looking at that.
Yeah,
so I ran across that looking at your stuff.
Yeah, HashiCorp Vault, that's that one's really cool. There's another open source secrets engine made by CyberArk, and it's called Conjure. And you can, you're gonna love this. It spins up in a Docker environment, and you can do all that stuff.
Hey, Docker is fine. I can understand Docker, but when you start doing Python with it, and you're trying to like have modules loaded or something, this
crazy kung fu. Yeah, sometimes that stuff gets a little wild. But yeah, HashiCorp Vault is, in my opinion, was easier to stand up, and it's more flexible because you can kind of run it in all these different environments. That's not to say you can't with Conjure as well. I bet you can. Conjure supposedly has more features and more flexibility. I think I'm not down in the weeds enough with some of these edge cases that these guys are using this stuff for to really know which one I would use when and where. It's like the normal stuff we do, like server passwords or network element passwords or storing keys, they all do that really well, you know. So I'm not sure what other uses I would really need it for.
I was looking at SSO's solutions, and I went to one of their websites, just I guess I don't remember the name of the company, but they then sent me an email, said they actually emailed me and said, hey, we see that you were on our site. They emailed the Aaron contact when I went to that website. That was so crazy.
You know what's funny is I'm pretty sure companies aren't supposed to mine Aaron to like contact you. Yeah. But as soon as I registered my autonomous system number, Hurricane Electric started calling me. I was like, bros, where are you getting this from? And the guy was I was like, the only thing I've signed up for where you could possibly contact me is through Aaron, and you're not supposed to be mining that stuff. He's like, oh, I just get this list. I don't know where it is. Yeah. Dicks.
So, so maybe he used to work for Cogent.
Yeah, Cogent's real bad at that.
Cogent's done that to me too before. Yeah, both of those jokers. Dang it. Suckers.
Yet, I think Cogent's still in their Aaron who is banned. They're banned for a year or two from even accessing it for any purpose whatsoever.
Ridiculous.
So that's kind of funny.
So everyone just joins on with their personal emails instead? How does that work exactly?
Yeah, I'm not sure the effectiveness of it. I think that was quite debated when Aaron made that announcement. It's hard to tell whether it's had any impact because I'm already on all their lists.
Yeah.
I also get the emails hi, I was going through your website, understand that you are dealing with the wireless internet service provider industry, blah, 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 and they're trying to sell me the WISPA list.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Over and over again. I'm like, I don't need the WISPA list. I'm on the list. I can just email the people on there, you know? And, come on.
Good times. Yeah, I've worked for companies before, and every company does this. They utilize, they spam, right? And so how do they get all this stuff? They go to, I think discover.org is probably one of the more famous ones for harvesting information. So you could say, hey, I'm looking in this specific area for people in this industry with this title, and it'll return like as many of those hits as they can. So you just grab their emails, you throw it in your spam stuff, and then let it, you know, fire off just unsolicited bulk email to these people when everybody knows that's what it is, and you just have to pretend like that's not where it's coming from, I guess, and you know, whatever. I wonder if any of that ever works. I mean, obviously it must. People wouldn't do it. Just like with the Nigerian spam stuff, right? If it didn't work, nobody would do it.
I mean, they got you on that call.
Do you know how many people have made that joke?
At 2 a.m.
That's so funny. So when I left Fibertown for a hot minute for about a year, and I came back, and when I came back, the email server was compromised, or not the email, so the web server was compromised, and it was sending out Nigerian spam, like print spam. And so I looked at the IP address that it was coming from, and I tracked it back, and it was actually coming from an IP block out of Nigeria. I was like, oh. Well, maybe this is legit. I don't know. Could be. Otherwise, these spammers are just, you know, really creative on where they're proxying their stuff through.
I've seen so many memes where, you know, just shows this, like, you know, this guy who is supposed to be a, prince from Nigeria with mountains of gold. He's like, I'm trying to give away my wealth, but no one ever responds.
Good times.
I too would be very confused if that was happening to me.
Why no one would take all my gold?
One, why would it? Why? You have to be confused to give away all your gold to begin with. So,
I guess that's true.
Yeah, but as a tangent off of that, something that's somewhat topical as well. In terms of, you know, how do they keep doing something? You know, who's responding to these things? I was thinking of, you know, all the, you know, Bitcoin ransom stuff that goes on, and not just, you know, ransomware on your computer, but there's also, you know, DDoS ransom things going on now.
Oh,
where,
yeah.
You know, where there's, Bitcoin. You know,
Bitcoin's 18 grand again.
Yeah, yeah. I got two or three people on Facebook that, you know, every time it goes up a dollar, they're making a post. It's like, I find something else to talk about, guys. There's people that are sending out emails saying, hey, you know, we're gonna DDoS you at this, you know, IP range if we don't get, you know, one Bitcoin or whatever, you know, I don't know the amount, you know, in the next 48 hours. And, you know, at this time, we're going to send a 30-second test just to show that, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to do it. And it's happening. You know, there are ISPs that are getting DDoSed by this stuff. And, you know, I've seen a lot more in the Facebook groups of people asking about, you know, how you stop DDoSes. And I think it was Kevin Myers said that they had clients that were reaching out to them with, you know, getting those threats. And then I've seen Sejan, that works for IP Architects now, asking on Nanog about how to reach, you know, DDoS contacts at X company and Y company. It's like, oh, apparently it's really happening.
Well, Miller can tell you all about mitigating DDoS. He's the expert now.
Yes. Yes, I am. Thanks for bringing that up, Greg.
You've got your subject matter expert.
I have implemented FastNetMon, so.
I just span up two servers. I haven't set any thresholds yet.
Oh, thresholds are hard.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard about.
Especially yeah, when, like... Yeah. Flows are weird. I don't get it. Sometimes, like, you'll see 20,000 flows for no reason. I don't know. To, like, one property or one person.
So did you try to, like, watch the trends for, like, a week?
More like a couple months. We were watching it for a couple months and kept bumping it up and watching things and then and tuning things. And it's probably still needs a little bit of tuning, but you know, probably, I don't know. It's unfortunate that you have to go through all this work because some kids in some video games, you know, start yelling at each other. So.
Yeah, that's how it is with a lot of these systems. It's like, you know, I can spend an hour or two following a guide and as far as, you know, how to setting up, you know, platform ABC. But now I've got to tweak it. It's like, you know, with FastNetMon or any sort of network monitoring thing, it's like, well, what do I want on a dashboard? I don't even know what I'd want to see. So someone tell me what I should see. Or it's like, you know, alerts. What's an important alert? What's not an important alert? You know, all that stuff gets into the, you know, now you got to spend more time than it took to build the system just figuring out what you want to do with it.
Yeah.
And then your network grows and then all your thresholds change.
Well, you know,
so you gotta do it all over again.
I mean, so what we're basically talking about is FastNetMon is gonna watch your network and it's gonna look for anomalous amounts of traffic, right? Anomalous volumes.
It looks for different types of patterns of traffic in both UDP and TCP.
Gotcha. So is it looking for specific types of attacks or just volumetric stuff, or what's it looking for?
Yeah, it picks up specific kinds of attacks, smurf attacks, stuff like that. It'll pick it up. But it basically has the amount of traffic to a single IP, the amount of packets to a single IP, or the number of flows to a single IP as tunables. Mm-hmm. So for us, we're natting most everything at a property, so we have high numbers for single IPs, which the default stats or settings tried to ban my entire network as soon as I turned it on. So definitely had to bump it up a lot. So
gotcha. So it monitors, it sees it, it sends you an alert, and it does a triggered black hole, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it basically advertises a single IP address with a specific community string that goes to your upstreams that says, hey, black hole this IP. Is that it in a nutshell?
Yeah, it uses EXA, BGP to trigger the remote black hole in my edge routers and then also my upstream edge routers. And then they also do their upstream edge routers and exchanges. And so when it happens, when it gets banned, it gets chomped off in about 30 seconds.
All right, so from the time it detects to mitigates 30 seconds, that's pretty reasonable.
I showed you that one video that we wanted to sanitize that we could put up. Yeah. That'd be pretty cool to do, I think.
Yeah, that'd be pretty boss.
And that was number of connections or flows that was increasing. You could see it. And it was all like odd traffic. It was coming from a DNS server to port 80 at the property.
Huh.
So it was like some kind of amplification attack that was happening.
Very interesting.
And I've seen like weird like port zero traffic, UDP port zero attacks and port one attacks and just one through, it'll just go through the ports, you know, just one through 65,000.
That's weird.
So, coming from everywhere. It's just
so
crazy.
I guess in a traditional DDoS attack, you usually see a lot of attackers hitting a single IP address, right, to try and knock the gamer off.
Yeah.
But what I've heard about is like these the attacks Mike was talking about, where these guys are like threatening your network to DDoS you. What they'll do is for like the first 10 seconds, they'll hit one IP in your range, and then they'll hit the next IP, and then the next IP. So it just sequentially will have your DDoS protection knock every IP address you have off one right after another. So ultimately they win. I mean, it accomplishes what they're looking for. You have to protect your network, but that would suck if they randomize that stuff.
Ultimately, if they were DDoSing all of my complete IP space, then that would be really difficult, I think. But I don't know.
In one of the conversations on that, I kind of noted that, you know, if this becomes a norm, that what I would like to see, you know, I'm hoping that for once people start taking BCP 38 and BCP 84 seriously, which seems unlikely given it's been a thing for 20 years and people still don't do it. Or that
that doesn't help with like huge botnets, though.
Yeah, they're just compromised machines.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, it's just, you know, one method. You know, it'd be nice if they figured that out. But then also, it would also be nice then if providers started taking BGP flow spec a bit more seriously and allowing people to push, you know, it instead of black holing your IP, you know, you push out an ACL to your upstream that says, you know, here are the, you know, 200,000 IPs that are currently attacking me. This IP is going to port 43. This IP is going to port, you know, 6942. Some carriers do that, but it's a very small number. And so, that'll be nice because if they keep doing this sort of stuff, you know, you can't just BGP black hole your whole range. So they're gonna have to get a bit more sophisticated.
Doesn't Team Cyrus have some kind of service that you can subscribe to that allows you to do some kind of black hole? And other people who subscribe to the service free to do the black hole as well.
Oh yeah, so, they've got a couple things. I know they have a new one. I started to sign up for it and think I didn't finish signing up before I got distracted. They also got something called Udders, the unwanted traffic removal system, something like that. You know, it's kind of a you know, BGP feed that they've kind of figured out as, you know, bad people. I don't think that's so much of a peer-to-peer aspect as the newer program. I suppose it's something kind of, it's probably similar to, like, you know, shadow servers. You know, they've got a list of stuff that they know is bad. But I mean, either of these upstream carriers are going to have to get better at just filtering the DDoS themselves. You know, not black holes, but in their router hardware doing it, or accepting a flow spec feed from you that says that's this ACL combination I want dropped.
Well, I mean, with the sheer amount of traffic moving across the carrier networks, it seems really difficult to ask them to start really trying to hammer down on that stuff for free.
Well, I mean, there's several that already are. If you buy AT&T, it's DDoS there's DDoS filtering in it already. It just happens. There's more than that. I just don't know who they all are because I don't want to buy them. I don't know enough about these things yet to really say if these would be the complete solution, but, I know that in a lot of the big chassis, routers now, they have DDoS mitigation line cards that they can add.
There's an add-on for the MX204s you can get that's really expensive. It's in software that you run on it.
Interesting.
The stuff's just going to get worse and worse and worse. So eventually, and now if it's, doing Bitcoin ransom attacks, you don't need to have some kid gamer that's bearing the brunt. It's the whole ISP, so somebody's got to figure something out.
Yeah, that's some crazy stuff to think about. I know I've talked about this before, but the idea of, I used to operate the network for a data center, and we had apartment complexes on there, and occasionally, like not very often, we'd get DDoSed because of one of those people, and it would be a really bad day for me. Right, occupationally, it was a bad time because it would impact all the rest of those customers that were in there. And so it's so funny that some kid could PayPal $20 to a botnet and could theoretically get somebody fired, right? Like, that kid's affecting somebody's ability to feed their family and stuff like that. So it's kind of crazy how far spread those ripples can be from something like that. But Nick, you were saying that you just stood up a couple of boxes. Are you guys having problems, or are you just being preemptive?
Yeah. No, we're definitely having problems. So we're trying to mitigate the best possible, but I think I'm going to try to pipe the alerts from FastNetMon to another server that's also going to cross-reference CPU usage before a ban happens.
Interesting. CPU usage of what?
See, the routers that are peering, that are usually getting hit.
Are these microtechs?
Yeah.
It's probably not going to matter.
Well, it depends, because we have a pretty decent length ramp up time by the time it takes the router off. So there's plenty of buffer room to check the CPU and then block it.
So they're not hitting IP addresses of your routers directly, are they? They're hitting customer
endpoints? They're always hitting customers, actual end users.
Gotcha. And I guess the full force of the botnet doesn't start all at once. It kind of ramps up slowly. Is that the idea?
It depends. It's not always the same, which is what makes it a little bit hard to detect. Sometimes it'll just hammer the router. Sometimes the traffic's small, but the CPU load is high. It's just, it's not the same every time.
Depending on the type of attack.
Even more irritating. Yeah.
Gotcha. How big are the attacks so far?
42 gigs.
Oh, geez. that's huge.
So slightly unmanageable, just a little bit.
We hammered up the IP manually at that time. That was a while ago, but yeah, that was a fun time.
That's some big league numbers, man. You should be proud of yourself.
Yeah, Oh, yeah, sure. It's probably only big league numbers because we have big pipes at the data center. And it could come in, so.
Still, quite impressive.
Good connectivity.
So what were you, so Miller and Nick, what was your mitigation strategy prior to Fastnet Mon?
Didn't really have one, unless you can get a hold of the upstream. I mean, once the router's out, it's out. You just gotta wait.
It's the fetal position.
Yeah, you gotta catch it before it gets to that point.
Like Squidward and that SpongeBob.
Future.
Just fetal position screaming. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was to be honest with you, that was kind of my early strategies as well. I was using that Border 6 system, and it would actually detect the DDoS stuff, so it would see the volumetric increase, and it would send us alerts, and so we could kind of do the triggered black hole. Well, I guess it was like manual black holing, so we'd put it in there, and you know, go to our upstreams and take care of it. So we had kind of a method, nothing that was automated. I never fully trusted it for that purpose, because that's not what it was designed for.
That's why I'm going to cross-reference like CPU load.
Gotcha.
And stuff to try to like double check before it just goes a little autonomous and starts blocking everything.
Well, I guess you could whitelist some of your important IPs, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, because it's highly unlikely they're going to do a trace route and then just say, okay, just before that customer, I'm going to hit the router that they're hopping
hey,
to.
Hey, let's not teach them anything.
Yeah, let's not say anything.
Come on, man.
Because that would be all the clever way of doing it.
No, yeah.
The last pinnable IP before it hits the customer.
La, 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 la,
DDoS the whole trace route to you.
Good times. That would take 2 seconds to script.
Get,
I don't think we're friends anymore, Greg.
Just gonna load all the IPs into a Jeez. Cannon.
But there's a, I mean, there's a variety of things that they could do to even to evade those systems. You know, they know that those systems exist. They know their ramp up times, and so they for someone not the Xbox guys because they don't know anything. They just want to attack you, but for those guys that are, ransoming an ISP, they know all that stuff exists and they know how to, how to check for that happening. And so they could, without saying anything publicly, there's a variety of things that I'm sure they know how to do to make any of those mitigation systems ineffective.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not rocket science.
Sledgehammer. Well, like we were talking about before, is they'll just cycle through all your IPs. They'll just make the system ban all your IPs.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's even worse. Yeah. But
just look their ASN up on Aaron and then figure out all their blocks and then just hammer them. It's not, not that complicated.
What was your circuit information for your MDU, Greg?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I was trying to not say it either they could do it for 10 seconds at a time, your system doesn't quite figure out what's going on yet and it just does every IP, just keeps the pipe full the whole time, or they do it long enough to get blocked and then you block everything.
Yeah, you just you just go up the list getting to block. Yeah. Nobody that's ever going to listen to this has any illusions to how this stuff works. So
the attack sources are mostly probably computers on paths that would come over transit for you and not exchanges potentially. So if you have good exchange access connectivity and you black hole on your transits, you can really cut down on a lot of the traffic coming in and not affect your end users' Netflix viewing habits.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which is a benefit for them. So
right, they may not get to Xbox Live or whatever, but they can still stream Netflix.
So you have pairing with Xbox Live too, right? You go into a couple of good exchanges, you connect to all the content that people are viewing, and then it's what will actually happen is when you get those DDoSes and they come through transit and that stuff gets blocked at that one particular person or property or whatever, that's on your network. They'll not be able to game with the people in their team or online because it won't be able to do peer-to-peer communications over transit links. So
nice. And you just sent them a nice little note that says, you're the reason we can't have nice things.
Everything else works. I just can't play with anyone right now. What's going on?
You've been putting time out, buddy. Sit in the corner.
Quarantine.
Oh, there it is.
Quarantine.
It's for your own protection. Oh, man.
So you could potentially write a playbook, Greg, to on a DDoS.
Yeah.
Move the IP address of your router or that particular person, like actually move their IP to a different IP.
Oh, black hole them and then switch swap them?
Black hole the IP, go to your IPAM, pull the next available IP address, subnet, and move them over.
Yeah. I've been playing with Infoblox, their DDI stuff, which is their DHCP, DNS, and IPAM. And they've got some nice modules where you just say, you do a lookup and you say next IP, and it just bloop, tells you what it is. And then you say, okay, I've assigned it to my server. Now make it a host and it'll go create an A record for it, create a reverse record for it, and then update it in the IPAM. Boom. It's pretty cool. I'm sure there's modules like that for like NetBox, maybe PHP IPAM. Something like that. I'm sure there are.
Yeah, PHP IPAM has a IP request system, but I have not used it. Maybe API as well, but I haven't used it.
I was just looking at their API yesterday. I think I'm talking to a customer on Tuesday that's using PHP IPAM. So just kind of looking at some of the different ways. I've really been kind of diving into APIs and figuring out how to really integrate them the best way with automation and stuff. So there's a lot of neat. I mean. A lot of the stuff we talked about.
API is king.
Do I?
API is king.
Yeah. It's crazy because a lot of the little, I wish they had this nice thing, a lot of times they're hidden away in APIs. You just have to know how to get in there and take advantage of them. So I feel like I've landed on a whole new planet.
And then you know you need some APIs, but the manufacturers won't make them.
Or they've got an API and they're just not very feature rich.
Calyx.
Yeah, no, Calyx never going to do anything like that.
Or some folks have APIs that are just undocumented, like 3CX apparently.
Yeah, or some of the stuff Unify, I'm doing right now.
Unify video and Unify controller.
You have to like make a post request to log in and then capture the cookie and then use the cookie to like hit the endpoints that aren't documented.
Yeah. There's actually a really nice Python module that you can install with pip called Unify-Video that makes working with Unify Video stuff in Python really easy. Like, for example, if all the cameras go offline because the Unify Video software is shit and you wanted to reboot the system, if you just can't restart Unify Video because it's got like orphan processes and all this stuff. I don't have time to write all the code and track all that stuff down, so I'm just system reboot. If all the cameras go offline, happens all the time.
Well, you got it sorted, man.
Yeah. Wish it wasn't like that, but
problem solved. There are so many problems I've fixed in that exact way.
It's the only way to fix them sometimes. Gotta do what you gotta do. Roll your sleeves up.
Yeah, and put a Band-Aid on it. Go about your business.
There's another piece of software that I ran across that looks pretty cool that we're poking called wiki.js.org. It's wiki software, but it's the most powerful and extensive open source wiki software. And it allows you to like do dynamic stuff in it and API calls and all kinds of neat stuff. So we're looking at that.
What was it again? Wiki.js?
Wiki.js.org.
Wiki.js.org. All right, yeah. I added it to the list. So while we were talking about DDoSes and outages and stuff, I had my first outage at my new MDU. And coming up on a year, so it's pretty good.
Oh, man.
That's not too bad. I called them up, and I said, yeah, I've lost access to my fiber service. And they said, oh, are you in San Marcos? And they go, yeah. And they go, well, there was a fire near one of our nodes, and it melted the fiber. And the fire department hasn't cleared the scene, so we can't get in there to fix it. So I was like, They said, once we can get access to the fiber, it looks like it'll be 4.5 hours or so. But that was at like 8:30 at night. when it went down, and then they didn't clear the scene until 1:30. But they had it up before 7 o'clock, so that was pretty good for an apartment complex. It's pretty good. But that was, I mean, that's a pretty extended hour. It's almost 12 hours, so that super sucks. But I mean, what are you going to do? And so it really, it sort of gave me flashbacks to the bad times.
Oh, man.
You know, like the bad old days. But it wasn't so bad. Because I don't know. My life is in a much better place right now, a lot less stress. And so I did just what I always do, just very clear, instant communication. So I got a hold of the apartment management and the maintenance guys, too, because everybody calls the maintenance guy, and just let them know what was going on. And then I put my... support line on the call handler that basically says we're having a widespread outage at this property. We're not sure what the ETA is, but we'll get it back as soon as possible. And so, lo and behold, my phone stopped ringing immediately when I did that because it went to the call handler and not my phone. But then, yeah, just clear communication with them and try to give them updates as I got information. You know, just the same stuff you always do. And at the end of it, they said thanks, and you know, everybody was okay after that. So it just made me think about incident response, and I was curious what you guys do. Do you have like set procedures for that, or do you just kind of always sort of do the same thing, and everybody just understands what you're supposed to do? How do you guys normally take care of that stuff?
It's a crapshoot.
Is that right? Just sort of. Whatever happens to happen at the time, just however you react, you go with it.
Yeah.
All right.
No, but on the Wisp, I generally don't have much going on, because most of my network is built in rings, and the data center I'm at is pretty good. They've got several upstreams and, you know, diversely routed and whatnot. So usually I don't have too much of a problem on the Wisp side. But on the other company, I've got transport from Frontier, because that's the only person that was available in that particular central office, at least, or anyone else that would be using Frontier. And after a while... on Facebook, I noticed that one of the other Wisps in the area, you know, he's probably a good hour or so away, was complaining about his Frontier connection. And so then, knowing that he had Frontier, and at this one CO, it goes way out of the way for some reason, you know, because I actually get fairly detailed reports back, you know, so there's a fiber cut on a 4-strand cable that's across the street from the cemetery in, you know, on Main Street in XYZ town. First of all, Frontier, why do you have 4-strand cables? Why, like, this is a main route. Why is it just 4 strands?
Maybe they have an IRU on 4 strands. It's somebody else's glass.
No. Oh, it's the middle of nowhere. There's nobody else. Nope. It's just them.
Nice try.
I've seen it happen plenty of times. They just, you know, buy some strands off somebody else.
Yeah.
And so now what we do is, if any of us has an outage that on Frontier, we message the other one to see if they're having an outage as well. If so, no need to scramble, just file a ticket, you know, to figure out, oh, you know, did my router disappear for some reason? Did this happen? Did that happen? Nope. If he's down too, then I know it's Frontier, and we just move on. Thankfully, I haven't had it as bad as him. He gets one outage of at least 6 hours every month.
Ugh.
And it's not, and you know, it's a pretty good sized pipe that he has. Thankfully, I've only had 3 or 4 outages. From Frontier, and you know, they almost always are 8 to 12 hours every time.
Damn.
For their resolution. So we're working on some builds of our own and some dark fiber and some other stuff to get another path into that town, because it's just ridiculous to depend on that. And it's like, oh, well, you know, they're down, we're down, nothing we can do. Just a couple of days ago, I actually had a line card go down. I messaged the other guy, and he's like, no, I'm still running. But wait, all the Frontier DSL in town doesn't work. But yet his Frontier, you know, 10 gig transport worked. Ended up being a line card that was down. And so thankfully that was repaired in about an hour. Which is actually really surprising, because it was at 9 o'clock at night. So they had the outage, figured out what the problem was, and dispatched somebody at 9 o'clock at night to power cycle the line card. So that was surprising. But yeah.
That's cool. Well, Nick and Miller, do you guys have set procedures you follow when you have an incident, or is it the same kind of thing, you just sort of play it by ear?
I guess it just depends what happens. I mean, I know at least for the ISP, there's a couple edges with multiple providers that have diverse fibers, so usually we can just reroute traffic all the way around. But luckily there hasn't been a lot, at least in California, because there's not a lot of weather and stuff going on. There are fires, though, and one of the main facilities for, I think, Spectrum, their air conditioner blew out, and it damaged a whole bunch of their fiber equipment.
Oh, weird.
So there's a huge portion of California over there that was down while they had to go repair the fiber, and then they repaired the air conditioner, and then something was still wrong with their configuration. So they had to get, like, new hardware from a vendor, and then they couldn't get the configuration from the old device applied because it was, like, a newer model. Like, it was a whole fiasco. So, like, you just can't control any of that stuff.
What if you guys drop a tower or something like that?
Hmm?
What?
If we dropped a tower?
Yeah.
Timber?
And that'd be pretty bad. It depends, because a lot of the places, they kind of overlook a huge canyon. So they're not super tall structures. A lot of them are, like, cemented in, like, short poles or tripod structures, because it's all wide open, so it wouldn't be that big of a deal. So I don't know. I don't want to think about that, though.
Well, I just meant, like, a tower goes offline, right? I mean, that happens.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, at least...
Also, not a structural failure.
No, okay. No, nothing so dramatic. Good Lord.
Oh.
Well, most of the sites have, like, 7 to 12 days of battery backup time. They're all DC powered.
Oh, wow.
And they all have redundant backhauls, so luckily that's extremely rare.
It's good. It's good. How about you, Miller?
When we get an outage, we typically notify our call center first. And then we'll dispatch a tech. We have someone on call 24/7, and then we have a senior on call as well, who assists remotely. You know, one guy out in the field, one guy looking at configs and looking at stuff. So,
gotcha.
It's typically how we handle it.
Do you guys do anything special with your phone system? Have, like, some automated message that they listen to first before they get over to?
We do have some menus that we can switch over to, some IVRs that'll let them know if there's a geographical area, like if one of our cities is down for some reason.
Something
we'll
big
that
like
up,
that.
But yeah, something big.
Yeah.
Usually if it's one building, we won't do that. We'll just let them come through, and the call center is like, where you live? Okay, yeah. We're aware of a situation there, and this is the ETA. Their techs are already scrambled and working on it, so.
That's cool. I have, like, a different line for all of my stuff, like a different one. And so I just pick that line and I put it on DND, like do not disturb. And that tells the call handler, hey, pick up and blah. So it's not like a very extensive process for me. I just choose the line, set it on DND, and then my phone stops ringing. But ultimately it goes there and, you know, gives them all the message very politely. And it says, you know, if you need to stay on the line, and it'll move over, so then it'll eventually get here. But everybody just hangs up when they realize the whole property's down.
Yeah, we use Ops Genie with Site 24 right now, and I think we're moving to Node Ping, and I think we're going to save $144 a month by moving from Site 24 to Node Ping, which is kind of crazy.
Same number of
nodes monitored.
I was gonna say, is it worth $1,500?
The API is actually way better on Node Ping as well.
All right, sounds like it might be then.
The only thing that's lacking on Node Ping is their recording. They don't have as much uptime globally across all your stuff that we kind of need. So,
What were you gonna say, Mike?
For the IX, we're looking at some more, doing something like PagerDuty, Ops Genie that's triggered by, internal monitoring. Circling back to, really Russ saying, you get the system monitoring stuff, but, how do you, all your time is going to be in figuring out, well, what do I want to alert? And, I don't want 14 alerts because one thing went down. So, figuring out all the dependencies and just all that kind of crap.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
But it'll be a pain in the butt, but I look forward to it being completed.
And OpsGenie posts the alerts as one notification method that we have to Slack. And inside of Slack, you can go and click acknowledge so that it'll silence the alert. I think you can put it in on maintenance too. But it's kind of neat. It's interactive.
Very cool. Oh, man. Well, we've hit the hour 15 minute mark. So this is normally where I ask you guys if you have any interesting bits you want to work in before we stick a fork in it. What do you think? All this silence. I watched Ted Lasso. Have you guys seen that yet?
Mm-mm.
No? It was phenomenal. It came out on Apple TV. I didn't watch it on Apple TV. But it was amazing. I would highly recommend it. We burned it down in 2 days. It was a really good first season. It's about a guy who is like a college football coach over in the U.S. And he gets hired to be a soccer coach over in England of like a Premier League team. And he knows nothing about soccer. Like, he doesn't know any of the rules. He's never done anything with it. And he just gets on a plane and flies over. It's pretty hilarious. It's pretty awesome. I would definitely say give that a shot. You guys watch anything cool? Entertaining?
The Mandalorian is excellent, and I'm really enjoying Star Trek Discovery. The season is excellent.
This is like the third season of that or something?
It is. It's gotten better every season.
Really? So for somebody who's never been a Star Trek guy, are you recommending it?
We're only... Yes, yeah, I would.
Right.
I think so. It's a little different. It's not. It's a little grittier. It's more like Voyager, in my opinion. Like,
I've never watched any Star Trek stuff.
I'm a little Trekkie. But I like Star Wars too. So
I've been enjoying Mandalorian. I don't like Star Wars, but I like the Mandalorian. So
the last episode is so cute when he's got the two wires.
You knew it was fixing to happen too. There's no doubt in my mind. It is ridiculous.
Yes.
My wife doesn't. She doesn't. She is not sucked in by the cuteness of the baby Yoda. She says it's like stupid little baby. I just want to kick it. That was her thing. That's what she said to me.
I mean, it isn't a football.
I was thinking, man, is that what happened to our kids? Is that why they're so stupid? I get it. All right. It's adorable.
Yeah, I haven't gotten brave enough to watch any of the Star Trek series other than the TNG based ones. I watch those and everything else just like doesn't seem interesting. But I suppose someday I probably ought to at least try it.
I've been watching a ton of British TV, but nobody likes to hear about it, especially the Brits. All those guys like Simon and Matt, they always get aggravated with me, I think, a little bit. But of course, it's Great British Bake Off is going on right now. A new season of Taskmaster. we're watching stupid stuff like Crystal Maze and The Wall. I don't know. It's just all this stuff I'm sure they hate. My wife loves Strictly. Like nobody in the U.S. knows what I'm talking about, and all those guys hate it, so I don't know. It's rocking a hard place. I don't have anybody to talk to this stuff about. Feel so.
I watched Doctor Who. Does that count?
No, because this last season I thought wasn't that great. Like, I didn't really.
It's they definitely interjected a lot of their political views into the show.
Yeah, I didn't even finish the season. I just got kind of bored.
Which
with
is new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I haven't watched much British TV since Jeremy Clarkson stopped being on Top Gear. You know, that pretty much stopped my reason for watching BBC America. Then. Pretty much stop reason for watching British shows. Circling back to what something that Justin had said earlier about the, you know, if you're getting the DDoS coming in, it's probably coming in over your transit, not your peering. You know, that does, you know, kind of goes one step further. If you've got PNIs and whatnot with Microsoft and Netflix and whatnot, you know,
yeah.
Not only, you know, because over the AX, it still could come in via Hurricane or someone like that. But if you've got a PNI with Microsoft, other than an Azure-based DDoS, you're not going to have a problem.
If you're getting any transit over the exchange from, like, Hurricane, for example.
Sure.
That could be a problem.
Sure, yeah. And then I've actually heard of people who they had one upstream that didn't really do anything at all. You know, they wouldn't filter it. They wouldn't do any sort of BGP black holes, and so. During an attack, they would have to drop that entire BGP peer to get out of it, because there's just no other way around. You know, if they blacked it on one, it's just gonna come in the other. But I guess they were in an area where multiple options weren't really a thing. So that was the pill they had to swallow.
Hmm. Well, that sucks. Well, that's all I know. You guys ready to put a bow on it?
Sure.
All right, let's do the thing. Let's see if I point the right direction. I did. Miller, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how do they do that?
I've got a blog, dynastatic.net, which has a contact form on it that'll email me, I think. No one's tested in a while.
Hold on.
Hold on.
I'll test that right now.
Yeah, give him a minute.
and obviously the Slack, I'm on there all the time. So the Brothers with Patreon Slack.
All right, rock and roll. Nick Arellano, if you wanted folks to get a hold of you out on the internet, how would they go about that?
Little Brothers with Slack, and you can also email me at nick.a@hey.com.
Excellent.
Nice and short.
So much easier. So much easier. And Nick, are you doing any consulting? Are you picking up a little bit here and there? You still doing that?
A little bit, mostly focusing on software stuff, though.
All right. So if you've got software stuff that you want Nick to take a look at, give him a shout. And then we've got Mikey, Mike Hammett. How would you have folks get a hold of you?
Patreon.com/TheBrothersWisp.
Oh, man. All right. Well, you didn't scream, don't get a hold of me, so that's progress.
Well, I mean, go there, then someone else will help you. I don't have to be bothered.
It's a nice way of saying the same thing.
Yeah, I guess
so. Hopefully that's going to be lightening up soon, because I think we're getting ready to post 4 positions. So then hopefully... I won't be dying every single day.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, maybe you'll get them filled this time. Fingers crossed, bud.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, if you guys want to get a hold of me, I'm Greg at gregsoul.com. I super blog all the time at gregsoul.com. I've super stuck to that schedule. It's been making me more productive, so I'm going to continue to do so. Questions, comments, send them to me or contact us at thebrotherswist.com. please jump over to patreon.com/brotherswiss if you're interested in jumping in the Little Brothers with Little Brothers with Slack, where you can contact all of us, ask questions, leave comments, help other folks. It's an amazing place. I really am just an observer there now. It's so crazy because I'll have like some crazy workshop or something. I'll be gone for 8 hours and I'll come back and all these questions that I don't even know how to answer have already been answered by so many other smart people. So jump in there and be yet another smart person. Contribute to the community. So thank you guys for listening and we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Bye. Stop. Jokes were loud and annoying. Come over here. Informative facts were not disappointing.
Just give us a listen, cause fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.